We're going to be looking through the book of James over the next 5 weeks, and I have to confess that James is one of my favorite books. And so this morning, as we dive into James chapter 1, I want to share just kind of a couple things about the book of James that I think will help you as you hear it preached and taught, and hopefully as you maybe read it by yourself in your quiet time with the Lord. James is a very unique book. James is all about action. There are lots and lots of action verbs. James is kind of like a coach on the sideline who's yelling at his players, do this, do this. I can imagine just like Jack, right? You hear Jack's voice on the sideline. You got this. You can do this. Come on, get in your stance. You can do this. Love your neighbor. Do this. It's all about getting in the game. It's about action. James is not interested in sitting and smoking a cigar and talking about theoretical theology. He doesn't care about the systems of injustice and poverty. He says, who's hungry and who's going to bake a loaf of bread or bring them some lasagna? Let's go, people. Come on. We can do this. James is the brother of Jesus. So you can imagine he has a little rapport with the people in this day and age. And he actually rises to become the leader of the church in Jerusalem. And it's interesting in this book that he doesn't name himself as James, the brother of Jesus. He names himself as James, a servant of God. He's all about serving. He's all about faith in action. And we're going to see this time and time again throughout the book of James. The other thing that we find from the book of James is that James is written to religious refugees that have been forced to evacuate Jerusalem and have now been spread all across the known world. So he is talking to people who have lost everything for the sake of the cross, for the sake of their relationship with Jesus Christ. He's talking to people who know a lot about suffering. And so when he starts preaching on suffering in this letter, he is preaching to the choir on this letter. They know the story of suffering, the song of suffering, the pain of walking with Jesus. And last but not least, one of the other interesting things about the book of James is that James, if I think he lived in modern day America, he would be diagnosed with ADHD. Because you read James, and every 3 to 4 verses, he's shifting in a different direction. Whereas a lot of our other books, you know, there's a comprehensive theme, and you can follow the logical arguments of Paul. But with James, you just kind of go along with the ride, because you have no idea what the next verse is going to say. Which I think is one of the reasons people like James, because you can take like 3 or 4 verses, and you get a whole idea right there, and you can just chew on those 3 verses, and you move on the next day, the next 3 verses, there's something totally different. And so while James can be a little bit scattered from time to time, he actually makes for some really interesting reading, and he doesn't bore you. So with that being said, let us jump in to the book of James together. Now, typically, when people were writing letters, there was a standard format. You would introduce yourself. Hi, my name is James. Most likely, this letter was being read to a church like you guys, probably about our same size, between 30 to 60 people. They were probably meeting in a small house, and people would have said, hey, we got a letter from James. He's here. Okay, great. And so they opened the letter, and typically, James would have said, hey, it's me. How are you guys doing? And then he would have done all the social niceties. All the people that he knew, he should have said, oh, please say hi to Jack and Margie and Jane and Rick for me. I miss you guys. I wish I could be there with you. But James doesn't do that. He skips all the niceties and he hops right in and he says, brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of any kind, consider it pure joy. He says, you know what? We don't have time to play games. Let's get into the meat and potatoes. Here we go. And so he jumps right into suffering. Generally not the way to start a conversation. Hey, how's your suffering going in your life? Really? Not even going to say hello. Just go with suffering. So he hops right in with this conversation about suffering. And it's interesting. He says, when you suffer. He doesn't say if you suffer. He assumes that suffering is part of the human experience. My guess is all of us would say we have suffered in some way, shape, or form. We have experienced trials. We have experienced difficult things. James is saying, look, to be human, to live in a fallen world, to live in a sinful world is to experience suffering and hardship and difficult things, things that create anxiety that we don't understand, things that don't make sense to us. He says, look, you can spend your life trying to create a safe hedge around yourself. You can do everything possible to try and make your life free of suffering, and you will 100% fail. And all these people know this to be true because they've been forced to leave everything they know, their home countries, cultures, families, left it all behind. And they say, yep, we know that's true. We know that you cannot avoid suffering. as much as we try. We live in a culture that tells us, you know what, if you buy this gadget and this home safety device and if you get this new degree and buy this book and buy these essential oils, you can be free of suffering. And the world lies. Because we buy those things no matter what neighborhood we live in, no matter what school we send our kids to, no matter how much money is in the 401k, suffering and trials and hardship is a reality in a fallen and broken world. And James says, can we just start there? Can we all agree that suffering is real and we have two reactions to it? Either we can run away from it and try and avoid it and get angry and bitter when things don't go our way, or sometimes in the Christian tradition, there is almost this masochistic drawing in towards suffering. Oh, if I suffer more, then I'm going to be more like Jesus. And I saw this in many ways and shapes and forms on the mission field. You would have missionaries who would go to these places and they would put themselves in horrible situations, intentionally suffering with this mindset, the more that I suffer, the greater my heavenly crown is going to be. And James is saying, look, don't run away from suffering. Don't run towards suffering. Suffering is going to find you. You don't need to go looking for it. He says, but when suffering comes, when life gets hard, when things don't make sense, when things fall apart, he says, the one thing we can control is our mindset towards suffering. Doesn't stop the suffering, doesn't belittle the suffering, doesn't mean it isn't real and painful and hard, but he says we can shape and choose the way we embrace and interact with suffering. With trials, with tribulations, with difficulties. There is power in shifting our mindset. A couple weeks ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, I had an opportunity to see the power of having a mindset shift. Allie and I are redoing our basement, and so we had to go buy 23 boxes of flooring at Costco, so they're sitting in the minivan, in the driveway, and they have to carry them into the house, down the narrow stairs, and into the basement, which is completely cluttered with all sorts of stuff. So I'm kind of weaving my way through the building materials and the kids' toys and all the other junk that's down there. And so I time myself on the first trip down. It takes me a minute and 37 seconds to get down and back up. So I'm doing the math, right? Okay, a minute and 37 seconds, there's 23 boxes. I'm gonna be carrying boxes for a long time. And I was not happy about this. This was not what I wanted to be doing. And it was late in the day, and I was tired, and my afternoon coffee hadn't kicked in yet. So I'm like 8 or 9 boxes in, and they're starting to feel a little bit heavier. My legs are getting a little bit more tired, and I'm getting grumpier and grumpier. And I'm standing there in front of the minivan, about to pick up my next box, and I say, you know what, Simeon, you were always complaining that you don't have enough time to go and work out. Consider this your workout for the day. Doesn't change the number of boxes that still needed to be brought down, didn't change the work that had to be done, but when I made that mindset shift of this was an opportunity versus a begrudging task that had been forced upon me, it became a completely different experience. All with a little mindset shift. And this is what James is talking about. He's saying, look, you're going to experience suffering. The question is, how are you going to react when those difficult things happen? What is your mindset going to be? And James says, you know, it's not just what is our mindset. He says when trials and tribulations and things come our way, that's when we figure out how deep and how strong our faith really is. That's when the rubber meets the road. It's easy to say, God, I love you with all that I am, right, when things are going great. When things are not stressful and things are great with your spouse and your extended family and your job. I came across a quote this week that said, calm seas don't make great sailors. If you want to be a great sailor, you don't learn by sailing on the pond. Look at me, I'm great. It's like you're on a pond. Try sailing in the midst of a storm and then we'll see how good you are. Peter is a great example for us of this. They've just come into Jerusalem with Easter right on the horizon, but he doesn't know it, and it's Palm Sunday, and look, everybody's celebrating and shouting, and they think Jesus is going to take over, and he's about to be a big deal in Jerusalem. And Jesus looks at the disciples, he says, guess what? I'm going to die. Peter stands up. You're not going to die. I'll die for you, Jesus. I will stand in your place. I love you so much. I would be willing to die for you. And Jesus looks at him and he says, no. He says, by the time the rooster crows tomorrow morning 3 times, you will have denied me 3 times. No, I would never. next morning, when the rooster crows, Peter has run away in the Garden of Gethsemane. He has fallen asleep when Jesus asked him to be present with him. He has spit upon the name of Jesus, cursed the name of Jesus, said that he doesn't even know him, totally disassociating himself. It's easy to say, I love you and I will die for you, but the reality is when the storms hit, that's when we find out what we're really made. I remember on my wedding day, standing up in front of a wonderful group of people with my wife, soon to be, beside me, and we took our vows, right? I will love you for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health. And on that day, it was easy to say those things. And then during the first year of marriage, when there was no money in the bank account, and Allie was sick, and she wanted me to make chicken noodle soup, and I didn't know how to make chicken noodle soup. And I was supposed to make it just like her mom's chicken noodle soup. Suddenly, I was like, oh, this is a little bit harder. Love in action, faith in action, that's where the rubber meets the road, right? That's where we say, God, I'm in this for the long haul, even if my chicken noodle soup is terrible. James is saying, look, how are we going to respond? He says, the trials and the tribulations are an opportunity for growth. I don't know about you, but I look back at my life and I look at the experiences that have most shaped and most formed me. Most of those are difficult situations. Would you say you're the same? If so, nod your head. Some of you? Okay. Because those are the moments where we learn who we are. What's most important to us? What do I value? Now, a lot of times it's not until we look back, right? Hindsight's always 20/20, where we see what God was up to and why he allowed certain things to take place in our life. And yet, trials become an opportunity for us to grow and to strengthen and to test our faith. And James has the audacity to say we should be joyful in the midst of trials. Now, I imagine that up until this point, people are hearing the letter and they're excited, and James says you should be rejoicing in the midst of your suffering. And this letter is being read to a group of people who are suffering intensely, and they say, I don't know. I don't know if I can get on board with that whole celebrate in the midst of joy. This is one of those quotes that can be so easily taken out of context. Your life is hard. You should be smiling and be happy because that's what God wants you to do. That is not what James is saying. James is saying, look, suffering is inevitable. We are all going to suffer. But God gives us purpose in the midst of our suffering. If we don't believe in a suffering God who has already gone before us, who suffered the cross, who has been into the deepest, darkest, most broken places in the world and in the human messiness, then when we suffer pointlessly. James is saying we have hope and joy when we suffer because we know that we don't suffer alone, that Jesus walks beside us. We know that God is going to take the most awful things that the world can throw at us and he can use those for good. And so it's not saying, look, have a fake smile on your face when things are falling apart. But what he is saying is if we're looking for Jesus in the midst of hard times, he will show up. And there is a point and meaning and purpose to the difficult things that happen in our life. It's not about being fake, but it's about being open and honest and vulnerable with God. Rather than curling up in a ball and saying, God, why could you let this happen? How could you allow this to happen? To instead ask the question, God, what do you want to teach me? God, where are you? I don't see you. The storm is blustering all around me. Can you speak? Can you show up? And to have a mindset and an outlook of expectation that God doesn't allow us to suffer without reason. And we may not know that until we get to the pearly gates and we have our list of questions for God, right? I don't know about you, but I got my list of questions. I'm going to wait my time and I'm going to have my time with the Trinity. And I'm going to get some answers. And we may not know the reason on this side, but we believe that our God is the God who journeys with us. He loves us even when things are hard. James says that when we suffer and when we go through trials, that there's fruit. That there's positive fruit. There's good things that emerge out of suffering. And the word that he uses is perseverance, which can also be translated persistence or patience. Those of you familiar with the story of Job, we'll often say, oh, that person has the patience of Job. It's the same word, patience and persistence. Those things go together. When we go through trials, we develop patience and persistence. And the image that's given with this word. Somebody who is persistent is somebody who's carrying a heavy load over a long distance. James says, look, when we make it through trials, when we look for Jesus, when we pay attention, when we are open to the possibility that God has something better for us on the other side, we begin to develop perseverance. We begin to be able to carry heavy weights over a long distance. Now, where I grew up in Papua New Guinea, people regularly carry things, heavy things, over a long distance. A lot of the people are farmers, and many of them will live in a village that will be miles away from their family land where they have their farm. And they farm sweet potatoes and things like that. And so, unfortunately, they live in a very male-dominant society where the women pretty much do all the work and the men protect the village, which means they sit around the fire. And so while the men are sitting around the fire, the women are walking miles each day to go to work. And they work long hours, hike up and down mountains, and you'll see little girls from the time they are like teeny tiny, they will have one of these. And these are called Bilum. And wherever women go, you will see them with the Bilum. And they will take the Bilum, and they will put it like this, and they hike with firewood, with yams, sweet potatoes. And you'll see little girls, and they'll put like one or two sweet potatoes in when they're teeny tiny. And as they get older, they start putting more and more. And so you'll see grandmas and mothers and daughters all walking together miles, carrying massive amounts of weight. Now, these women in Papua New Guinea are not big. Your average Papua New Guinean woman is probably like 5'2", 5'3", maybe weighs 100 pounds soaking wet. And they will carry their body weight for hours hiking up and down these mountains because over years and years, they have developed incredibly strong muscles. My dad found this out the hard way. We were visiting friends of ours who lived like halfway up a mountain, and the village was at the top of the mountain. And so we're sitting there on the front porch, and we're talking, and we hear someone singing as they're walking up the spiraling path. Now, so before we can see them, we hear this woman's voice, and she's singing. And she comes into view, and she is hunched over, and she is old. The word for old in Papua New Guinea culture is called tambuna. Not many people achieve tambuna status because people don't live that long. And so here is this tambuna singing at the top of her lungs, carrying an entire bilum full of firewood. Probably weighed as much as she did, if not more. And you could see that literally the weight was so much that she was struggling under the weight, but she's singing. And she's celebrating as she goes. And I could tell because I know the song, it's a Christian worship. No radio available, so she's making it up. Here she goes. And so she comes and she stops in front of us to say hi to the white skins who are there. And we're talking, and you know, we give her a glass of water. And she gets ready to go on her way all the way back up to the top. And my father says, hey, let me help you with that bilum. And she smiles. She says, okay. And my dad goes, and he can't pick it up. And she is just dying of laughter. I mean, she thinks it's the funniest thing that's ever happened. He's like, okay. Tries it again. And eventually he just has to say, I'm sorry, I can't do it. And she takes that and she whips it up onto her head and off she goes. And I'm sure she had a story to tell when she got to the village, right? Because she had done the work. She had been through the trials. Her muscles were strengthened from years of hard work, of enduring difficult things. My dad hadn't put in the work. And so he couldn't carry the burden that she had. When we endure trials, we develop spiritual muscles, perseverance, love, kindness, and compassion. These are the fruits of enduring faithfully through difficult seasons of life. Now, I don't know this morning what you're carrying. My guess is we all have one of these, right? And it's filled with firewood that has different names on it. Difficult marriage, stressful work. My body is aging and falling apart, trying to take care of aging parents. My kids aren't listening. They're not ready to launch and be productive young adults, whatever it is. We carry all this stuff with us, right? And I don't know what you're carrying this morning, but I guarantee you're carrying something. It's probably stacked neatly around you right by your seat this morning. And whether you want to or not, you're going to put that in your Bielum and you're going to walk out of here with it. And so the hope for us is that you don't walk out of here alone. You don't walk out of here by yourself. Jesus says, "Come unto me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." He doesn't say, "I'm going to take all the stuff out of your Bielum." He doesn't say, "I'm going to carry it for you to the top of the mountain." But he does say, "You can come to me and you can rest and you can re-energize, and I will walk with you and I will encourage you and I will love you even when the road is difficult and the storm feels overwhelming. I will not let you go." He's the God who says, being confident in this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on until that what I started in you, I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to give up on you, even when you feel like you want to give up on yourself. He is the God who works all things together. He is the loving and patient and persistent God, the very word that James uses to describe those who have been through suffering. Is the very word which is used to describe Jesus. That no matter where your road takes you, Jesus has already been there. And he is behind you. He'll push you up the hill when you need to. He'll hold your hand when that's what you need. He's not going to take away the things that you carry, but he will journey with you. And I don't know about you, but that is good. Because there's plenty of stuff in my Bielum that I'm carrying with me this week. So my encouragement for you is don't be afraid to say, "Jesus, help me." If you guys came to the Hera household, you would hear that a lot. "Help me, Jesus, because these kids are driving me crazy. Help me because this computer is not working. Help me because I can't figure out this stupid form. Help me because. Jesus says, "Lay it down. Take a seat. Take a breath. Take a moment. And then let's keep walking. I will never leave you. I will never forsake you." Friends, those are the words of our God, who gives meaning and purpose, who wants to take the most difficult things in life and use them for our betterment and for the betterment of the community and the world in which we live. Let's make that shift. Let's make that mental shift when difficult things come about to me. Say, "God, what are you up to? I don't see it yet. I don't understand it yet. But I'm ready to listen and receive whatever it is that you have." May that be our story. God, thank you that you do love us. Even though some days it doesn't feel good, some days it gives us sense. Lord, in those moments, we ask that we would turn to you and not away from you. That we would trust your plan and walk faithfully. For our sake,